you may be the only one that looks like you in a room or that has the idea that you have in the room. And as a DEI practitioner, that's an advantage. And so I think when you start to even turn power dynamics on their head based on being in, let's say, a very or a mostly homogenous room, or then being invited into that room, you're able to use that to your advantage and say, you know, I have a different idea than all of you in this room. And we actually need more of that. Like, being in complete agreement on something means that we may need to call in more people into this room. And one, they may or may not look like us, but two, we should make sure that they have a different opinion and a different stance on something, or that they see this problem that we're trying to solve for differently. And that ultimately will allow us to make better decisions. It allows us to implement better solutions.
Hello, everyone. This is Jolene May, your host for the DiverSeek podcast, where we talk with real people doing real work in the diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging space. If you want to explore what people are doing right, what positive impacts are happening, or even how positive changes can be done, you're in the right place. We welcome you to join us. Today, I'm happy to have Adam Boone with us. Adam is the Inclusion, Diversity, and Equity Program Manager at PagerDuty. The passion for his work in DEI revolves around the consideration of identity and power. Adam takes special consideration to intersectionality, which parts of our identities aren't afforded the luxury of being authentic in or out of the workplace, and what responses are elicited as the balance of power in and out of the workplace shifts into a more fair and equitable space. In his free time, Adam enjoys walking around New York City, taking portraits and capturing moments with one of his many film cameras. So welcome, Adam.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Same. We're excited to have you. And I'm excited to talk about your journey as in becoming a DEI practitioner and what we can take away from this to support the growth that we're seeing in this field. So on that note, let's start with you. Tell me about you, yourself as a human, your background, and your current role in DEI.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my name is Adam Boone. My pronouns are he, him. I am of mixed race, born and raised in the Bay Area, and as you mentioned, a new resident of New York. My work as a program manager within inclusion, diversity, and equity at PagerDuty for just over a year now, really working to help scale DEI efforts in across the organization, really, within PagerDuty that we have. So as you mentioned, in my personal life, I come from a family of artists on my mother's side. So art and creativity really are part of my blood. And for me, that translates into film photography. So I'm often about the city with my camera or just in my apartment playing with one of the few cameras that I have.
Thanks for sharing about yourself and your creative side too. I appreciate that. So to dive into being a DEI practitioner, first off, how would you define what being a DEI practitioner is?
Yeah, I think as a DEI practitioner, I call myself a DEI practitioner. I think of DEI really as this business practice and something that is fairly new to organizations. And so one of the things that I don't necessarily always want to do is put myself or put any of my peers in this space into the box of what it is that we do. I think oftentimes DEI gets placed within the HR function of an organization and then can be perceived as this HR initiative. And if you haven't been following the space or you are new to understanding what DEI is, you say, okay, so you are working within recruiting to get more diverse candidates, one, within our pipeline, but then two, within the door of our organization. I think it being so much more than that. And I think as we start to uncover that and talk about, you know, what does representation mean? What does identifying and uncovering inequities that exist within the workplace for different communities? And what does a sense of belonging look like? I think having that touch every part of the organization, both collectively within a function, but then also for individuals as well. I think as you dive into that, that's why I describe this work and my peers in this space as practitioners.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned that it's not just hiring. It's not just marketing. It's not just communications, right? It's more than that. It's more just than function, right? Function is a part of that, but it spans beyond that as well. So I just wanted to hone a little bit more into the differentiation here. So how does the role ideally of a DEI practitioner differ from other DEI related supports within an organization?
My hope would be that it does differ within each organization too, because I do think every organization, you know, PagerDuty compared to the next organization is going to have different needs based on the size of the business, where you operate, and ultimately what your DEI team structure looks like. So I think for myself as a practitioner, you know, I am a program manager really focused on a lot of internal programming that's based on, I would say, the employee experience and engagement components of inclusion and belonging within PagerDuty. And that can look much different for those who are on our team that are really focused on, let's say, community and building out the communities that we have, whether that's employee resource groups, affinity groups. What does community look like from an external lens too, with some of the partners that we have through nonprofit organizations, through our social impact team? I think those are areas of DEI as well, specifically touching on the equity piece and also in the inclusion piece. But I think it differs based on how you are focused, or let's say the lens that you look through within DEI in your role.
Definitely. And I think it's important to note that we obviously also have diversity within DEI and how we approach it as practitioners. So what ways do you see different practitioners approach their work that you have seen? And like, what's your take on that? How do you think organizations and executive leadership can be inclusive in their spaces to include the diverse ways that people approach DEI work?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I know, at least from my team, that, you know, I approach this work, I think, both different than my manager as well as my peers on our team. It's different from the practitioners that I have within my network now at other companies. And so I think that's always something where I mention this, I think, weekly, where we can't and I can't follow the same practice as, let's say, another company within our space. We are going to have different challenges, a different composition of employees. We're going to have different objectives, and we're going to work in a slightly different space. And so I think constantly mentioning that diversity, but also talking about what that representation means. Like, I want to be necessarily working with peers who share the exact same experience and want to approach the same exact challenges or opportunities the way that I see it. Because I think ultimately that means we're going to have a gap in our approach and in the solution that we look to implement. So I think making sure that we have a more well-rounded balance and composition of, one, perspectives, two, identities, and then three, what some of those solutions can look like for the organization is incredibly important. And that really speaks to the diversity within this space.
I think that means a lot to start with valuing the differences that are present and what that can mean for what that inclusive growth is going to look like for the organization. So with you and your journey, tell me about that. So what did your journey of growth look like into being a DEI practitioner, and walk me through your growth stages with that?
Yeah, it's a great question that I've, since moving into this space, I've been asked a bunch, both by friends, peers, colleagues, former colleagues. And so for me, my entire career up until this point had been based in operational roles, really as an analyst, and most recently within PagerDuty prior to this role, I was in sales operations and I had a great team, great relationship with my manager. And I think over time, I became more and more aware as my career progressed of the different barriers that myself, my peers, friends who are going to be coming from historically marginalized and oppressed identities, some of the complexities that we face in the workplace because of those identities, that became more and more palpable, I would say, in my career. And so as I was starting to learn about those, one of the things that I was mindful of was when I started at PagerDuty, one of the first things I recognized was a lot of people that looked like me would come up and introduce themselves. And that was the first time that I had really experienced that in the workplace, which I really appreciated for my own sense of belonging, because I wouldn't think about that prior. But I think once people started to come up to me, introduce themselves, talk about what they do and wanted to get to know me as well, I was able to say, okay, well, I belong here. I can do this. This can be a career for me. And so I had the privilege of starting an employee resource group with a colleague of mine that I work with. We created the employee resource group for Black and Latine employees at PagerDuty, which was an awesome experience. And then I fast forward to the winter of 2020, being home in my San Francisco apartment and really just unsure of, I think, the fulfillment that I was getting out of my career at that point in time. And it was also right around the same time that our former director of DEI was leaving the company. And I remember as he was leaving that I just was very concerned and focused on what it would mean for the company to not have anybody in the DEI business unit at that point in time. And that was front of mind for me on a daily basis of just not necessarily knowing what the future would hold for that and the lapse with having nobody in that space. And so I was having those thoughts, and on his way out, I think he gave me a little bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge by handing off several deliverables that he was responsible for to me and said these were things that he felt I was not only interested in, but would be really good in the interim of managing. And so upon taking those on, I was investing more and more time into them on top of my day job within sales operations. And it was just one really interesting to work with people that I had only worked with from the employee resource group or social impact work that I've done for, with the company. And two, it was just, I was finding the fulfillment in what I was doing on a daily basis that was really impactful. I've talked a lot about it, of feeling as if my career prior to DEI was understanding what I can do to move the needle for the business. And then now describing it as a much more daunting task at times. But I think with some of the solutions you can do within DEI, you get to move mountains, not just for yourself, but for entire communities within an organization. And so that's really important to me. And I had reached a point where the role that I'm in now became an open job rec. And I took my time to think about it and had several conversations with colleagues, including our former director, and was unclear about stepping into the role, because the question that I had asked everybody was saying, do I have as great of an impact doing this work in that role full-time, or trying to lead by example by doing some of this work and showing, you know, maybe not being exactly a DEI practitioner, but I can take some of those tools, resourcing, and best practices of DEI into a completely different job, which was sales operations. And everybody gave me a very resounding yes to that answer, and that I could have a great impact by doing this work full time. And so after putting some thought into it, I decided to apply for the role, and I'm here now.
Yeah. And thanks for walking us through the detail and the experience that you had through that growth process from, you know, you working in operations, ERG. That's awesome to hear. And then like, hey, this opportunity kind of presented itself and I'm thinking about it. And then you to hear that you had a team that you could talk to about it and just process and then have that support. That's great to hear as well. And now within your role, like, you know, I can see you being like, okay, I'm working and doing this full time. Has there been anyone who's been a positive influence or inspired you as you've grown fully into that role?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. If I think of the through line and try to connect some of the dots of what's led me here, it's growing up in the Bay Area. One of the things that was important for me was I didn't know that tech would be a possibility in the first place for me. And so I think growing up in the Bay Area and having this whole dot-com era happen and Silicon Valley becoming what it is, I didn't know that I could work in this space until I started seeing people that looked like me on the cover of the San Francisco Chronicle being hired for the head of diversity at some of these larger corporations that we see here. And so I think about that as a starting place. And then I think about kind of the influences that I have, whether it's one of my colleagues at Leeds, our learning and development function here at PagerDuty, whether it's our former director of DEI who kind of opened doors for me as well, I would say. I think I've had multiple conversations with our CEO, both before getting into this role and then after getting in this role, of this work and kind of what involves and how it impacts PagerDuty, but also how it impacts my own career journey as well. I think I have a lot of influences within my network, whether that's my personal life or my professional life, that have really inspired me and I think validated what it is that I'm doing and the impact that I feel that I can have. Because with this being fairly new, you know, over the course of just over a year now, it's hard to see that at times. And so being able to get that from your network and being able to hear that the work that you're doing is, you know, it is having substantial impact across the business, or it is making people think of things in a different way, or it is helping other organizations and peers at other organizations approach their work differently. I like to talk about with DEI, we don't all have the same approach at different organizations, but it's certainly open source. We certainly share, bounce ideas off of each other's around what works and what our organizations are finding success in, as well as what challenges that we have.
Yeah. And it's great to hear that from you, that you had that connection with company leadership to feel that, you know, you're invested in, your position is invested in, and the work that you're doing is invested in and supported. And that even though this work, and from what I'm gathering, you know, sometimes it, you know, everything has peaks and valleys, and to still feel that you are supported and validated in your work, I think it's so, so important for all DEI practitioners to have that support system, especially from leadership. So it's great to hear that you're experiencing that as well. And I wanted to ask on that point, like I'm hearing and seeing you kind of grow as we're talking through this process and growth that you've had through your career path here. I wanted to ask, was there a way that you feel that your DEI work shaped you that you didn't expect it to?
Yeah, I think this work has really helped shape me with various leadership competencies, but the one that really comes to mind is around communication skills. I was not someone who felt comfortable speaking in front of an audience, whether that was in person or on Zoom in front of a large audience, and never really thought of myself as having the best writing skills and effectively communicating within, let's say, an email when it comes to whatever the message is, or within Slack. And so one thing that this work has really helped me with, and being in this role has really helped me with, is becoming a more effective communicator and being able to speak one-to-one, or being able to speak in front of, feeling comfortable speaking in front of thousands of people at this point in time. I could speak in front of any audience or write any message to any audience at this point, and really have not just, I think, my personal convictions about this space, but also knowing the work that there is to do in this space and what this work means, not only to myself and those of identities that are historically marginalized, but what this work means to organizations and what this work does mean to all of us when we get to a point of, I think, the enablement within DEI.
Yeah. It sounds like you've further clarified your resolve and why you're doing what you're doing. With that, now where you are now, what is your personal mission, like how you carry yourself in your work now?
Yeah, I think carrying myself in my work now, I see so much of my work being revolving around enabling people to do their best work and to grow into the best version of themselves. And I know how that is often a message that is shared, but I think so much of my work, I use an analogy of my photography passion here, is I really would like to help everybody think about the lens that they see through, whatever their subject is. I want them to understand the view that other people have through their lens at the same subject. It can be whatever topic you have, it can be whatever subject you have, but there are multiple views to that, and it can help inform your own view. And so ultimately, I want people to see somebody else's point of view and perspective through their lens on the same thing. That doesn't mean that it's my job or that I have a desire for them to change their view or their lens. I just want them to be able to see what it looks like through somebody else's lens and have them be able to go about that work and to feel confident in doing that work of understanding that they can improve upon their work, they can improve upon themselves when they take that into consideration, whether that is their work, whether that is their personal life. And so that really is my mission, is to get people to see other people's point of view.
I love that, because, you know, this brought up something to me where pushing your agenda doesn't change people, but listening to them does. And that's what that was evoking within my brain when I was listening to you. And you kind of answered in a way the last question, but I think you might have something extra to answer for this. But lastly, on this topic, what piece of advice would your past self have greatly benefited from, like right as you were starting your trajectory into DEI?
Hello, listeners. Time for a quick break to give your brain a quick rest. If you have not done so already and would like to support our mission, please follow our podcast, leave a review, or share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening in, and let's get back to the conversation.
I would say there's a quote for this, for advice, that I would say Miriam Kaba talks a lot about hope as a discipline. And I think that is really important for me in starting this work within DEI. I think of this work as being so much more than just impacting a bottom line or enabling teams to and leaders to, you know, see the alignment between DEI and what their objectives are. But I think this work really has a human element to it, individually and collectively. And so I think with everything really that kind of continues to take place, I remember really vividly my first 30 days on the job was the shooting that took place in Atlanta. And that was something where I'm involved in those calls now. And I was like, okay, this is part of this work apparently. And I'm on these calls, I'm in these Slack threads. And first I'm just kind of listening to what people are saying and what ideas people have as far as what do we do. And I just kind of jumped in and I was like, hey, I'm going to tell the whole company, regardless of what your identity is, but particularly if you are from our Asian American Pacific Islander community, like I'm going to be on Zoom this Friday at this time, and I'm going to do it again on Monday. Like, come talk to me if you need. if you want to talk one-on-one, let me know. But like, you may or may not know me at this point in time. I'm only 30 days in this role, but like from a very human approach, if you need somebody to talk to, let's do it. And I remember having several conversations with a colleague of mine who is an Asian American woman, and really just trying to think about like, how does hope show up for her at that point in time? And how do we move forward both for her and her community collectively, her individually, and then how do we do this within the organization? And I think through several conversations has translated now into that community having a employee resource group that's fully funded and creating their own internal programming for their community, as well as helping educate the company as well on some of the experiences there. And so the advice that I would have loved to have when I started was understanding that hope is a discipline.
To hear that you provided space so quickly and you're like, hey, whoa, this is big. This is something, at least, you know, that's how I'm seeing it because I'm directly affected by it. But you're like, well, this is something we need to address and let's provide space for that so that people can talk about it and they feel supported. I think that's awesome that you did that. And yeah, thank you for that quote. I appreciate that. So thank you for sharing your personal experiences and journeys and where you are now as a DEI practitioner. Let's go ahead and move into helpful tips and supporting those who want to be DEI practitioners. So on that note, you know, you mentioned being human, right? And there's all these facets of being human, and that's what being human is. So for those who are interested in going into a role as a DEI practitioner, what are, to start with, like the hard truths, what are two or three hard truths that you think are relevant to this role that they should know?
I talked earlier about how in this work, there's opportunities to move mountains, or that I feel as if there are opportunities to move mountains. And that's part of what has got me into this work. And I would also say that in this work, kind of regardless of your identity, you can really be taxed in this space as far as trying to make positive changes that are going to be seen as monumental. And so one of the things that I talk a lot about is where are there small victories within systems, process, policy, change management that you can have? And how do you just build day by day, week by week on those? Because you're not going to be able to change and invest in all the things that you want to do within DEI, within the month, within the quarter, within the fiscal year. These are going to constantly evolve as your companies grow, as your companies evolve, as we come into remote hybrid working environments. You're going to be coming into a lot of different challenges that you have to face. And I think one that's going to be taxing on you personally, but then also your work professionally. And so I would start by saying, just to make sure that you are stacking up the small victories where you can, and also celebrating those, because those are important to celebrate, even if it's not, you know, your big lofty goal and program that you want to get off the ground. I'd say secondly, just a hard truth is really understanding the way that power dynamics show up within this work right now, and how you identify different gaps where initiatives, programming, change management, and investment can come into play. Headwinds that you face and the opportunities that there are is going to seem overwhelming at times, because there's plenty of work to be done and there's constantly more work that is going to get, you'll get brought into. And so just making sure that you're really aware of what prioritization looks like and why. I think, you know, there's goals and objectives, but I think also as a DEI team, you want to be able to talk about what priorities there are as the most important things to accomplish at a certain moment in time, regardless of what's happening out of the workplace, and making sure that there's alignment within the company on what you're doing, but that you're also taking that feedback from your employee base, from your leaders, and saying, this is what we are hearing, then this is what we are going to work on.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see, as somebody who has imposter syndrome, and I know I'm not the only one, right? I resonated and I was like, oh, that's really interesting when you brought up power dynamics as well, because, you know, and I'm not bringing that up as like a negative connotation, but it is a reality. It's a truth that we need to say, okay, that's fair that you feel this way, or that you think that this is the initiative or the push. And where are we? And how do I communicate that as a DEI practitioner so that we're staying focused on the priority, right? So that when you mentioned that, I was like, wow, I want to ask more about this, because you also mentioned your consideration for identity and power. So, you know, with that in mind, for those DEI practitioners that are maybe on top of becoming a new DEI practitioner, but also becoming a new leader and finding what it means for them in those situations, what tips would you give them to support them in being confident or gathering the resources so that they can navigate those power dynamic type of situations?
Yeah, I think with leadership, just understanding the importance of kind of what we talked about in the beginning around representation, and that, you know, you may be the only one that looks like you in a room or that has the idea that you have in the room. And as a DEI practitioner, that's an advantage. And that team, that room may not see it at that moment in time. And I think going to the imposter syndrome point is like oftentimes, whether it's, you know, starting in this work or being the only one that joins a call or is in the room, you are unsure on the validity that your opinion or idea has to that room. And I think working in DEI, you start to learn that there is power in that. And so I think when you start to even turn power dynamics on their head based on being in, let's say, a very or a mostly homogenous room, or then being invited into that room, you're able to use that to your advantage and say, you know, I have a different idea than all of you in this room. And we actually need more of that. Like being in complete agreement on something means that we may need to call in more people into this room. And one, they may or may not look like us, but two, we should make sure that they have a different opinion and a different stance on something, or that they see this problem that we're trying to solve for differently. And that ultimately will allow us to make better decisions. It allows us to implement better solutions. And that will in turn impact this organization and our employees in the way that we are seeking out to do.
So we talked about kind of like the overarching hard truths, looking at your day-to-day based and unique to the DEI work. You know, what are some do's and don'ts you'd outline based on your day-to-day work? You know, because I know that there's the organization part, there's like the, oh, I need to stay tuned part, right? So just based on your own experiences, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I definitely always start with do listen more than you speak. That's a big one for me, is because a thing that I don't want to do is assume an answer or a perspective for a team, an individual, or a community. I'm not going to know that. If I don't identify with a certain community, I am not going to speak on behalf of them. I can speak on maybe some of the sentiment or the data that we've captured from them, but can also say, hey, if there's nobody from this community and this being considered in what we're trying to do, we should invite them in. We need to call them in and make sure that what we're doing is seen as appropriate, is seen as what they would like to see the organization do to support this community, is supporting the ongoing efforts that we do have. And so those are things of not assuming the perspective that somebody else has. Another one that I love is to do ask questions. I think oftentimes being able to uncover what it is that we're trying to do in the first place. So I often think about, you know, what's the goal of the program? How does this align to our larger objectives as a team or as a business? What desired outcomes do we have? What unexpected circumstances might we find ourselves into? Are we measuring this? Who do we think that this impacts? So I often ask a million questions, and I think it leads conversations in different directions at times. But I think that's something where it is really impactful for us to uncover that, especially as fast as organizations want to move. I often find my line of questioning, maybe in the interim, slowing us down, but it's going to help us move so much faster when it comes time for that. And also have a solution that we may not need to revise as much. I think oftentimes it can be the, let's just get this out the door and then, you know, revise and tweak this solution from there. And I often think about, how do we create a more robust or more refined solution that can grow, but doesn't need so much work revising along the way? Because that, to me, is, I think, going to be more scalable as an approach.
Yeah, those are very great starter tips on how to be efficient and listen and kind of, you know, because I do think that DEI practitioners were kind of like in this middle ground space, you know, where we're talking and collaborating and connecting with executive leadership, but also considering what ground level employees are experiencing and what we are, you know, promoting to our stakeholders and all of that jazz, right? So I think it's important to be efficient, but how do you do that in ways that seem simple? You know, and so I appreciate you just sharing those do's and don'ts, because I hope that a listener who is like, I want to do this, like, how do I become a DEI practitioner? How can I start? Or I'm in a new role. What are some places that I can start? I think those are great do's and don'ts, or we didn't even do don'ts, but do's to start with. So I appreciate that. So to move away from the do's and don'ts and the easy stuff for the times where we're faced with difficult decisions, you know, and we're human, like you mentioned. So, I mean, as we know, we are human. With that, we can become uncomfortable. We can become biased. We can become really hurt or concerned or not able to function in that moment. It might need some time. But, you know, what are some things that you do to bring yourself back to balance, to keep a level head, or to help with those decision-making processes during difficult situations?
Yeah, I think difficult situations are bound to happen in this work. I think that's part of the nature of it, as you mentioned earlier, with peaks and valleys. And I think that's the nature of a career. That's the nature of being human, as you mentioned. And so for me, I think about this as saying, doing what you need to do to recharge your own battery is going to allow you to show up into the spaces in which you work the way that you are, one, called to do, but then two, being asked to. And so for me, that is as much as saying, making sure I'm in a clear headspace for a decision. If we're in a difficult day, or something's been turned down that we're proposing, or something outside of the workplace has happened that's really taxing, you know, on our mental at that point in time, I personally just like to, one, get off of the computer, get off of the phone at least, and just truly disconnect a bit and get offline with myself. That can be meditating, that can be going to the gym. I like to, as I mentioned, just walk around with 60-year-old cameras around the city. So that can just be putting my headphones in and going for a walk and just really getting away from work for a bit to allow myself to either make the best decision going forward, and I guess not being stuck in making that decision, but being able to make sure I'm in the right headspace for a decision. And then in turn, I think for the difficult decisions that have been made that didn't go the way that was intended, if I was the one making the decision, like, I'm always going to be the first one that's going to raise my hand in a one-on-one or in a very public forum of team or functional or town hall meetings at the whole company and say, the decisions that we made or that I made, and for ABC reasons, and guess what? It turned out poorly. This is what I learned from it. And this is how, like, my humanity is going to show up in this call. But also going forward, these lessons are going to help us in this regard. And I think that is just a piece of authenticity that I find employees seeking so much. I think there's oftentimes such a preparation to not make mistakes, particularly within this space. And I'll be the first to say that I make a million mistakes, I think, on a weekly basis. And just being able to call those out, understanding that's, again, how humanity does show up and where those mistakes are made, what lessons were learned from them. I think that's what helps this space the most, is being authentic and employees seeing that and seeing, you know, how do I bring that into my function across the business? How do I bring that to my team? How do I bring that to my personal life? I think those are really important lessons, both personally and professionally.
I just want to say that I truly appreciate you mentioning being vulnerable with your mistakes, because that means a lot to me. Some people, I have been in entry-level positions where my supervisor or company leadership made a mistake. And I was like, oh, what am I supposed to do now? Like, are we still doing this? You know, and company leadership didn't address the mistake, or there's been times that they have. And the times that they have, they're like, hey, we made this decision. This is the outcome. It's not what we expected. So this is what we're doing about it. We apologize for the impacts that it may have had on you. Like, those times for me, I'm like, oh, I can let go of this cognitive labor now, you know, with just that acknowledgement. And that probably only took like less than 5 minutes to say, you know? So, and I think that going back to the weight, I think a lot of DEI practitioners also carry sometimes. And with that, letting go of the mistakes and saying like, hey, I tried my best, but may not have been the best decision. And I apologize for that. These are the things that we did, and this is how we're going to move forward and so forth. I just think that's a great reminder for especially not just new practitioners, but practitioners who are practicing, that making mistakes is human and it's okay. So yeah, I just wanted to say that that really resonated with me. I was like, yes, I love that. That's great. And on that note, you know, we've been mentioning the ups, the downs, the greats, you know, the difficult things that DEI practitioners have to face, but what opportunities can organizational leadership use to empower their DEI people, their leaders, their teams within their own ranks so that they feel supported through this? I know you've mentioned connection with executive leadership, but I think this is an area that we can continue to promote so that we can continue collaborating together.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of really ripe opportunities for organizational leaders across the board when it comes to empowering their DEI leaders, and I think empowering their own ability to, I would say, both harness and utilize best practices of DEI. I think a lot of times about one myself advocating for what are the meetings or projects in which I get looped into as the DEI practitioner that somebody empowered with the same skill sets or the skill sets of DEI as well as the best practices of DEI, how can they bring that into the call? And so I think as an organizational leader, how do you really bring DEI into one, both your company values, but then also aligning the company's objectives with DEI, and how do those dots connect for people when you are not in DEI? How does that work for engineering? How does that work for product? How does this work for our go-to-market teams? These values, these objectives for our go-to-market teams are able to be accomplished based on some of these DEI programs and practices that we've put in place and invested in. And I think those are areas where when you reference it in the same way that you talk about company values, it gets people to start to think beyond DEI being this recruiting tactic and this HR initiative. I think DEI as a business practice is starting to grow into this place where it does need to become its own function going forward. It does need to be receiving investment, company investment on its own, and not a division or a business unit within a HR and people organization. I think you're starting to see companies really leverage DEI into marketing strategies, go-to-market strategies, and figuring out how does product and product accessibility tie into DEI. And so those are things where when you zoom out, if you will, there's so many elements of the business that can really improve the efficiency, the productivity, and ultimately the output of what they're trying to do by incorporating DEI into it. And I think as organizational leaders, when you come to speak about that with your teams with a cadence and really a conviction, not as a DEI practitioner, your teams and individuals on your teams, those employees will start to say, okay, that resonated with me and I can connect to that. I can bring this into what it is that I'm trying to do. I can understand where representation lacks on my team. I can understand how, let's say, the performance review cycle within this org is not seen as equitable for everybody within this function. And so I think there's plenty of opportunities for organizational leaders to really drive this message forward with not only their executive staff or their senior staff, but across their entire functional or company-wide employee base.
Yeah. How can this work be embedded in the foundation of the organization? That's a whole other conversation too, looking at strategic planning and initiative building and things like that and the core values. But I know we're running out of time. Two more questions to close this loop on this topic. I wanted to ask for an example. So has there been a time where you were creative in curating a solution or DEI initiative that was successful?
One of the examples I like the most is we have an employee engagement program that was really stemmed from feedback we've gotten in surveys that was saying, any and everything that goes on in the world and or in the workplace, like how do I, as you know, whichever identity that I have or identities that I have, how do I support this identity? Like I know this goes on for this identity. I know they have these different inequities that they face. I know that this is something that is a community that appears to be a struggle in the workplace or out of the workplace. And so one of the things that we did was worked on creating different toolkits. So I thought of this as part of the question base of saying like, okay, a question that does come up is saying, how do I support fill in the blank community? Well, how do I support? How do I do my part? How do I be an ally to this community? In working with our social impact team, we created different toolkits. And one of the ones that was really impactful was last year, we created a voting rights toolkit. So something that's near and dear to my heart, but also something that was a topic that was specifically brought up from members of the Black community within PagerDuty was talking about, this is something that is of the utmost importance to us based on what is happening outside of the workplace. Here's why. Here's how our community is impacted by this and or by voting rights as a whole. Here's what we would like to see the organization do. Here's what you as employees can do. And really just bringing all of that together and working with our social impact team, who is already working with nonprofit organizations in this space and saying, like, all these tools and resources are at our disposal. And we just made this really elaborate toolkit on answering that exact question of saying, what can you do? Here's 5-6 steps that you can do. Here's context and information that you can seek out in regards to what this means, why this matters, and what ultimately the impact this has when you do this. And so that was one that I was really proud of, because it's a very straightforward question that a lot of people ask of, like, you know, how do I ally and how do I support, you know, fill in the blank community? And I basically worked with our social impact team to say, like, we can answer this in a way that is also fairly straightforward and give them a toolkit, something that lives on beyond this day or this week and can be referenced over and over again. I think that was a creative approach that I was really proud of, because we got a lot of feedback from folks that were not previously engaged within our employee resource groups, within any of our social impact work towards that specific community. So it was great to receive qualitative feedback in that regard from people that were, one, learning about that as a issue and how it is that they could support their team members or their colleagues at that point.
Wow, what a meaningful impact process that just happened right there, that had a lot of collaboration and engagement and investment on an individual and organizational level. So that's awesome that initiative blossomed into something bigger that's meaningful and that it sounds like it's continuing to grow and continue on. So that's awesome that you did that. That's great. And that your team did that. So to close this conversation, if you could tell us about an experience you had where you witnessed even maybe a small change enable a positive outcome at work.
Yeah. So one of my favorites would be, I had mentioned the colleague who heads up our learning and development function here at PagerDuty, and her and I had worked for over a year on trying to get a mentorship program off the ground. And she was leading this program and I was helping, and we did it as a pilot program. And I was really helping with the strategy approach to this. And I think some of the early feedback we got from employees was, as a two-way mentorship program, specifically for our Black and Latine employees who were all individual contributors, having this be a mentorship program in which our senior leadership team, including our CEO, were involved in mentoring these employees, it was both two-way component of it is that this community has given feedback to the leadership of this employee resource group and in our surveys. So we had quite enough data to validate this community is specifically seeking career development opportunities, conversations, road mapping, and really, I think, coming up with the architecture for their careers. And I had gotten looped into this pilot, I think, for several reasons. And one was that I had such a large pivot in my own career. But one of the things that we were finding early on was that we were coming up with these topics that were what we thought people wanted to talk about. And we pretty quickly got feedback from employees saying, like, no, this is what I'm seeking. Like, I want to understand how to architect my career, or I want to understand how to pivot into something completely new. I want to learn about how to get into people management. And so I think the gathering of that data, the collection of that data, and then actioning, having her action that within the content and context of those conversations to say, okay, we've received this feedback early on in this pilot. Here's how we're going to use this program going forward. And we just got fantastic feedback about the program. And as our learning and development leader, she always delivers incredible trainings across the organization. But I think that was something that was such a small change, but connecting the dots between, again, we've received this feedback. And so here is the adjusted output that we have, hoping for the intended outcomes that this program has. And we just saw such great results and feedback from it, as well as, I think at this point in time, we were seeing how it really impacted retention, which is a big conversation right now. And so I think being able to collect that data, to capture that data, qualitative data, and then be able to do the storytelling around that and how it connects to employee retention for that community is a really important piece that I found really impactful as a positive outcome.
It's so awesome how things take off sometimes, something small. So thank you so much for sharing that awesome example. Those are awesome ways to end this podcast. So on that note, thank you again for joining us today, sharing with us your journey, your experiences, and the awesome things that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. This was fantastic. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today as we continue to explore how we can enable diversity at work. Follow us and get notified of our latest episodes. Also, we want to hear from you. Please like, rate, and review us on your podcast app
or wherever you're listening in. If you want to contact us, please visit diverseek.com. That is diverseek.com. This episode was produced by Madhu Nair, edited by Jonathan Dalek, researched by Jolene May, music composed by Nicholas Lang, and our production team includes Keisha Williams, Prashant Falbar, and Maria Quirina. I am your host, Jolene May, and you have been listening to Diverseek.